It is November 13th, 2024. We are in the Jervis Public Library in Rome, New York. My name is Jessie Burchett, and I am doing an oral history interview of Leona Chernosky. Leona, could we start with, could you tell me where you grew up?
I grew up in Osceola, New York, which is a very small town. Now I think we have maybe 220 people. But back when I grew up, there was more. But people have left. Mm-hmm. So it's a small town, though. Very small.
So has it always been a small town feel?
At the turn of the 20th century, it was quite a bustling community. A lot of logging and sawmills and cheese factory, a lot of dairy farming, small farms. But that dwindled fast when the logging slowed down and the farms decided they could not make a living there. And so it's diminished a lot since then.
So who did you grow up with?
Actually, I was born in a little, my mother called it a shack. But it was a small place. And after a year or two, my folks bought the farm from my grandparents. And they built a house where the shack was, and we moved over to the farm. I don't remember any of that. So that's always been my home, where I grew up and where I'm living now. So it's quite a treasure to be able to live where you grew up.
Could you tell me a little bit about your parents?
My parents?
Mm-hmm.
My father he was born and raised there in Osceola, and always a hard worker. He was drafted in 1942 to go in the Army, and he could have gotten excused. But he said, no, if they've called me, they need me, I'll go. So he was he didn't have to leave. I was born in December of 1943. He didn't have to leave until after I was born. So he was inducted into the Army in 1944, maybe in April. So my mother, I have an older sister. She's just a year and a half older than I am. So my mother and my sister and I lived not there on the farm. We didn't stay on the farm at that time. But we stayed in apartments here and there. One was with my Aunt Genevieve in her apartment in a town called Pulaski that's not too far away. So that's the way we started. My mother was a city girl, but she had always loved spending her summers and any time she could in Orwell with her grandmother and grandfather. And she learned to play the fiddle from her great uncles when they would all get together and play, and she learned to play. They didn't, I think she started when she was 7, but they didn't think she was a girl should play the fiddle. But my great-grandmother said, if that girl in the Bluebird Orchestra could play, you can play too. And so she kept at it, and she was a very popular musician around the countryside. She played for dances in Redfield with a band for probably 20 years. So that's the way I grew up, was with a lot of music. My father was hardworking on the farm, and it just wasn't meant to be, because it's just, the ground is not good for crops. It's a really difficult place to try and farm it. So in the 50s, he went to work at Camden Wire Company, and he gave up the cows. And it was really hard time when we had to sell the cows. It was really difficult. For probably 6 months after we sold all the cows, we kept an old milk cow named, what was her name? I can't remember. But we kept her, and she was our pet. But then we had to get rid of her too when winter came and it was too cold. So it was difficult, but we all survived. Then my brother was born in 1948, and I have two younger sisters who were born in 1958 and 1960. So there's quite a gap in the family, but it's all worked out really well.
How did growing up surrounded by music influence you and your siblings?
The rest of my siblings, all except my brother. My sisters all have played the fiddle. I tried, but I couldn't make it sound like Mom did, and I really was lazy. I didn't want to work hard enough to get to be that good. So, but music is certainly a big part of even our lives today. You know, we're trying to carry on what she did. So, none of us are as accomplished as she is, but my daughter, Jackie, plays, and she's very good. So she's helping too. Carry on.
What does music as a form of this heritage, so music as heritage and as part of community, what does that mean to you?
I would say it's very important. It wasn't for a long time, but the older I got, the more I realized what a valuable thing that was for us to have all that music and all that talent around. And you know, we were always in chorus and everything at school. My siblings all played in the orchestra and school orchestra and stuff. I never did, but I was always in the chorus, and we had great success with all state and all county and all that kind of stuff. We sang a lot of concerts. So yeah, I think it's very important to have something like that for kids to rely on, that they can always go back to that and pick up those memories. And I always say I was born on the dance floor, you know, but I spent a lot of time on Saturday nights going to the dances with my mother from the time I was about 8, 9 years old. Sometimes we'd stay with my grandmother and grandfather, who lived just over the road, and sometimes we'd stay with them and play cards or games or whatever you do with your grandmas. They were interesting people too, my grandparents. Those are my father's parents. And he was a lumberjack, and he was a tough old bird, but a great sense of humor. And he wrote letters to a radio personality in Syracuse. They exchanged letters, and I have all those letters. And my son and I did 3 webinars a few years ago, and with using Grandpa's letters. My grandmother was more stoic. She was a very solid old-time lady. She always had a dress on, always had an apron, and she was a great cook and kept a beautiful house. And I always thought my grandfather must have been a forward thinker, because, I mean, somebody built the house for him. People he hired, built the house. But he had a half bath downstairs. This was in the 40s. A half bath downstairs and a whole bath upstairs. And that was not the norm in those days. But for some reason, he realized that would be the best thing to do. So I always thought that was kind of remarkable. So.
Can you tell me more about the project you did with your son, about your grandfather's letters?
Okay. We have a lot of his and my father's old tools in the barn. We have kind of a museum wall in the barn with all his old stuff. And so anything we could relate to from his letters with the tools that were there, we incorporate that into the webinar. So we had, each one was about an hour long, and we would take one of Grandpa's letters and include that for that, at least one for each webinar, and tell some of the stories that were from the woods, you know, the logging. They logged with horses and a lot of lived in their logging camps. In fact, my father was born in a logging camp. My grandmother was the cook, and Grandpa was the boss, and he was born there. But it was a hard life. No, you know, nothing much fun about it. They did a lot of logging in the wintertime because they could skid the logs better on the snow than they could. So they really turned out very, very, very interesting. And it was a great project for my son. A lot of hard work for him because he researched to make sure everything was correct the way my grandfather had put it. You know, you never quite could tell what Grandpa was going to say. But it turned out really well. A lot of good response from it. So, and you can still get it on YouTube, and it's called Letters from a Tug Hill Logger, and there's three different parts to it. So,
you were born in Osceola.
Yes.
Why did you decide to stay in this area?
Well, I married a local guy, and that makes a big difference. When I graduated from high school, by mid-July, I graduated in June, on mid-July, I was living in Syracuse with my aunt. And I got a job down there, and I worked down there for a year and a half, and I met my husband-to-be, and he didn't want me to work. So when we got married in February of 1963, I got done working, and I was a housekeeper and homemaker for many years until the kids got big enough. When they went to school, it was after that. I went, when the youngest one went to school, I went to work at school, and mainly because we needed insurance, and I could get insurance if I worked at school. So that's what I did, and I worked at the school in a lot of different positions for 27 years, I think it was. So it was, that's why I stayed there, because that's where I was supposed to be. But I lived about 25 miles from where I grew up, and we still have the house. My daughter lives there, but I'm back in Osceola again.
What brought you back to Osceola from?
Well, my husband had a disease called Lewy body dementia, and it's a tough disease. And it got to the point, I retired and took care of him for 4 years, and it just got so bad I couldn't handle it anymore. So we had to put him in a nursing home. And at the same time, my daughter was looking for a house because her family had outgrown the house they lived in. So I said to her, why don't you move to my house in Lorraine, and I'll move to Osceola. We owned it, and I won't have two places to keep. I'll only have one place. So they agreed to that, and they're living there in my house in Lorraine, and I'm living in Osceola, and that it makes me happy. I'm very happy there.
Could you tell me a bit more about your positions within the school?
Okay.
Those 27 years?
When I started, I was just an aide. And like monitor study halls and lunchrooms and stuff like that. And I took a civil service test for library clerk. And I did very well. And I was offered a position as a library clerk. So I took that and I worked at that for, I don't know, maybe 14 years. And I worked in two different schools. But I had, for the first 5 years, I had a children's librarian that was wonderful. She was just a great librarian. And the next person they hired was a professional librarian, but she was not anything like the first lady I worked for. And she just didn't, she had a lot of personal problems and she brought them all to school with her and it was difficult. So I got to thinking I could do this job, but I don't have that paper. I really need that paper. So when my youngest daughter started college, I started college. And I ended up, I did my undergraduate work through Empire State College. I did a few courses at JCC in Watertown. And then I did my graduate work at Syracuse University. And I did an ISDP program. It's when computers were first getting going good. And you could do online. It was dial-up, if you can imagine, doing college work with dial-up. It was interesting. We'd have a week of classes on campus each semester, and then we'd do our work from home. And so in a year and a half, I graduated. So I started in 1991, and I had my master's degree by June of 1996. So by then, the school knew I was getting my education, so they hired me as a library assistant, and they had cut a library position, so the librarian would go to three different libraries. She'd work between three different libraries on 1 week, and then the second week, I would go to those same libraries and use her material to teach whatever she thought was appropriate, which worked out good for me. And it wound up, they had cut that position of the lady I worked with, and the librarian from the third school. We had three different elementaries. And she took that traveling librarian route. And then they hired me as a librarian. Once I got my library degree, they hired me as a librarian, but they put me in the high school. And I had only ever worked in the elementary, but it was okay. I managed up there, but I didn't like it anywhere near as well as reading stories to kids. The elementary was fun for me. The high school library work was difficult. It was more difficult. And So that's where I was when my husband was finally so sick I couldn't keep working. I retired in 2006. So that's when I retired. And so I've been at home since then, but I worked for probably 12 years in the little library in Osceola as a public librarian. Only a couple days a week, not a big job. So, but it was nice. I liked it there. So I retired from that 2 years ago. So
being a librarian in these different spaces, what do you think is important about your role as a librarian?
Oh, just getting books into kids' hands. I think anything that you can do to get a kid to read is going to make such a big difference for them. It's just so important. And there's a lot of kids that are coming up through school and they don't read. They don't want to read. So I always just encourage kids to find something they like and read it. I was so tickled when Harry Potter came out because boys started reading. And that was the biggest challenge, to get boys to read. But they loved Harry Potter. So if you know that worked for a while. But I do think that's the most important thing. And I liked helping kids find what they needed for their studies or showing them how to use the library and how to use the card catalog. Now it's all on the computer, and so you have things that you can teach them that are helpful to them. So that's, to me, that's the most important thing a library can do, is help kids read. Learn.
You started school at the same time as your daughter.
Yes.
Can you talk about how your daughter influenced your experience with school?
Well, she hadn't graduated from high school yet, but we talked about it, and she was willing. She wanted to take some courses ahead, so we went up to JCC and we took our, whatever the English course was that you have to have first thing. That's the course we took, and went to class together because she was still living at home. And we went to class together, and it was fun. It was interesting. It was fun, and it got me started, because that was I had never thought much about college. I certainly, when I was in high school, I was in the top 10% of my class, but I had no clue what I wanted to do. There wasn't anything that I was thought would really be great to do. Just didn't have a clue. So by the time she got done school, then I knew what I wanted to do, but it was a little bit late, but it worked. It worked. I did it, and I was working full time at that time. Even though I was taking the courses, the school was good about letting me go for that first week every semester, and it all worked out very well. And she, my worst trouble was math. I am no good at math, and I don't like it either. And so I made sure and take my math courses in the summertime when she would be home, because she was very good at it. So I took my math courses in the summer when she was home so she could help me. So she was quite a tutor. That was an interesting part of my education, having to rely on my daughter.
So let's talk a bit about the New York Folklore Society.
Okay.
Can you tell me when you joined the society?
I don't remember. I know my mother had affiliations through the New York State Old Time Fiddlers Association and the museum up there in Osceola. She was featured in their magazine. I can't remember what it's called. It's Folklore or something. And I think it comes out 4 times a year. And she was featured, my mother was featured in one of their articles. And so that's when I first became aware of it. And then they helped the organization with some transferring from cassette tapes to CDs. They had done interviews with all, probably 80, 100 old-time fiddlers from around the state. They had a whole group of people that were trained to do what you're doing right now. And they went all around the state finding these old fiddlers, getting their recordings and their narrative oral histories just like this is. And so that was pretty neat. But that was really the first interaction I ever had with folklore, was, you know, helping get those tapes to where they had to be and get the CDs home, you know, and back in the collection. So in the time since then, we haven't had a whole lot of interaction, but I always joined when I went to library conference, because they were always at library conference. And I got to know Ellen McHale. And belonged to the organization. I don't know as I paid my dues, because the library conference was this weekend, this past week. And so probably my dues are up. But I've had some affiliation with them. You know, if they have some questions about something, they're likely to ask me, probably, as relates to the fiddle organization, because I'm the one they know. So, right now, I am president of the organization, and that makes me more open to conversations like that, you know. But I don't know everything.
What's your role as president of the association?
What's that?
What's your role as president of the association?
I just have to kind of run everything. We have to have a lot of reports. It's an all-volunteer organization. So we have a lot of reports we have to do for the state. We get NISCA grants every year, knock on wood, and that helps us with our summer concert series. So we have to take care of all that and do the grant work. And then if we get the grant, then we have to do the reports, and we have to look for other grants to help us maintain the facility. And we have a lot, there's a lot to do. There's a lot to do. My daughter was president for a long time, but it's just too busy a time in her life right now for her to keep up with it. So, lucky me, I got elected.
What are the summer concert series?
We have, usually starting in June, early June, we have, every week, we have a concert on Sunday afternoon, and it's a free concert. You can come in and just enjoy the music and dance or whatever you want to do. And we have a guest artist who plays. In the last 2 years, we've changed it a little bit because